It is time to bring in Jim Lynch and Cover Your Assets. Jim is an independent voice on Wall Street, the economy, sports, and politics. Brings over 40 years of experience to those subjects and more. And we welcome him this morning. Good morning, Mr. Lynch.
Good morning, everybody. Thank God for rain.
Well,
there are some people who are thrilled and other people who are trying to get the branches off there.
It'd been nice to get the rain and nice, gentle, instead of being the heavy downpours that most of it runs off.
After the heat, I'll take what we get. Anyhow, congratulations, Manny Rivera.
Ace,
Leaf pitcher, New York Yankees. Elected to the Hall of Fame, first guy to get all the votes. That is amazing. He's an amazing, amazing guy.
Well, it's also amazing when you consider, now, if I were a voter, I'm pretty sure I would have voted for Babe Ruth 100% and Ted Williams 100%.
I'm not saying you're not accurate. I'm just saying I'm saying that this is the fact. That's
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
And it comes during a pretty good Yankee season. So,
well, last night.
Yankee fans such as Marshall. Have a great time. But you're right, with Williams, my guy would be Stan Musial. We've been lucky in America. I mean, a lot of countries have been lucky with great athletes, because there's nothing like having aspirational things in your life as a child or as a young or middle person, something to look forward to see. Great talent at work, the great energy and decisiveness it takes to be a number one athlete. And Rivera has certainly proven that. Many of these relievers are very good, and then they blow out because it's very tough work. The tension is incredible. But anyhow, congratulations to him.
It's also to him as a human being, by the way, on top of it all. One of the classiest baseball players ever.
Amen. I'm glad you said it. He is. Style, class, humility, fans, his speech about the fans and how every time he went to pitch. I truly believe that. I mean, his performance was like somebody says to you, okay, let's do this. It's a tough job, but let's do it. And the fans kind of rooted him on, and he did it.
And he did it with one pitch. That's
it. I know.
One pitch.
I know. But the key to the one pitch is he got it where he wanted it. Be it over the plate sometimes, or a little lower or a little higher.
And he had, they said, the length of his fingers and the makeup of his hand is the difference why he is the only relief pitcher in history that can have one pitch, one go-to pitch, and have it be so effective. Really, it's one of those amazing, amazing stories.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So we've been graced by his presence on the mound here in New York. And I'm basically, always have been, certainly had my prejudices team-wise, a fan of the game, because the game, for some of us who grew up at a certain time, was really, really so, so important. Anyhow, let's talk a little history. I've been meaning to deal with this particular sentence or so. It comes from some famous people. But let me just read it to you. The key are the words, not exactly who it came from. And the words vary dependent on interpretation over the last 100 years. It goes something like this. It actually began, I think, with Santana in 1905, according to my historical maven, Jill. And Winston Churchill repeated it in 1948, and basically this is a quote, those who don't know history are bound to repeat it. Those who don't know history are bound to repeat it. And those words are so, so, so important, regardless of author. Or the one saying them, although the way it gets said is significantly important. I use that as a jump-off point to, as a service to people who, for some odd reason, listen to me in the morning on a Tuesday. I really have to deal directly with the fact that Donald Trump is like Adolf Hitler, who was the fella who really knocked the world apart in the Second World War. They both use lies, L-I-E-S, to make scapegoats of minorities, black, white, Jewish, Irish, whatever, pitting them against each other. Now, in this country, we've not been immune. Trump is not the first one to do this, but he is the first one on record to do the lying and the threatening more than I think anybody else in the history of the presidency. The key thing is not that he's done it so much. The key thing is to understand what he's doing. He says and keeps repeating that, you know, these are the bad guys, be they people in the United States or our allies who he's called out and said, oh, they're not supporting the NATO enough, and they're not doing this and not doing that. Really being nasty and really doing lots of lying in the process. I have to veer here for just a second to explain to Mr. Trump that NATO was created after the Second World War, along with the European Union, to basically ensure that we don't go to one of these world wars again. In other words, we learn from the mistakes that were made, and we don't do it again. But here he is doing it again, much as Hitler separated various countries throughout the world, like the English and the French. So too, Trump has done that with Britain and with France, whereby he's making them the enemies of supposedly his people. Well, this is all false. NATO was something that's worked very well. And by the way, the only time, and this is where people have got to pay much more attention, I think, to the history of things. NATO came to our aid during the 9/11 situation. That's the only time they've come forward like that. It was so great a need. And that's important that we realize it's a world organization that's dedicated in its own way to peace. And if we don't get that, and if we let the blabbermouth get us off base, we're going to be in big trouble when this thing explodes one way or another. The key is that, and this comes from, I think, Orwell's, it doesn't really matter, but I have a feeling many people are just being beleaguered with Trump's lies and conversation and are listening to him as the truth, when in fact the truth is right before the eyes, right before individual citizens' eyes. And this goes to certain things like the tax cut, which gave people of wealth a tremendous advantage, and gave to most people in this country very little advantage. Yet for some reason, so many polls show, and these are not polls just about 1%, that people think, oh, the economy's great and I'm doing great. Well, the stock market's doing great. Corporations have been doing well, but they're slowing down a bit. But people have this, not people, many or some people, believe that things are better than they are because they keep getting told that. Also, for some reason, people are not accepting the fact that the federal government is basically avoiding the truth of climate change, avoiding the truth of our foods continuing to be poisoned, deregulating those agencies that are meant to help us keep safe and healthy. And they're doing that for the benefit of those people who run corporations, who are big stockholders, who are very wealthy people. So it is a call to arms in terms of going forward politically. I mean, we're a democracy. Our strength is in numbers. And if we don't have the numbers, if we keep dividing, then we'll basically fall as a country. I hate to say that, but and I don't believe it'll happen. And I think Trump will leave the stage sooner than later, I hope. But if we are just lazy on our ignorance about what is going on before our very eyes, then a couple of things will happen. We will be shocked when it hits the fan, so to speak. And who knows, many people might become quite despondent. It's amazing. Some of the most prolific supporters of Donald Trump are people, one, who don't know much, people who are one-note Charlies and say, oh, I'll vote for him no matter what he does. Well, the thing about Donald Trump is, and many people, you can frequently know who they are by the people who they relate to, or friends or colleagues or whatever. We have an individual case right now, which is quite amazing. A fellow named George Nader, who helped in campaigning for Trump. As he went into that job, he'd already been convicted twice of pedophilia and pornography, and subsequently convicted again. And now he's in jail because he's been convicted again. A known pedophile was in the campaign for Trump. And so I'd like to hear Kellyanne Conway address that. But more importantly, this guy has been in the inner circle. There's pictures of him, he and Trump, arm in arm, beaming. The other great colleague of Trump, and I know he has many savory ones, is Jeffrey Epstein. And I don't, and I prefer not to detail anything there. You're getting enough of it. But what does this say about the character of Donald Trump? How do you mingle? How do you mingle with people like this? Don't get me wrong. Living in New York, I have known folks who were gangsters in the true sense. I've known them because I've known them. The neighborhood I came from and or I ran into them. But they did not become colleagues. They were too polite to shun. So we all have life's experience. It's not unusual, particularly in a large metropolis, that you run into all kinds of people. But basically, being friendly with Jeffrey Epstein for 30 years has got to tell you something. And Epstein's behavior was kind of well known to the various circles that he traveled in. A great example of what went on was what went on with Weinstein of Hollywood. People knew what he was doing with these young women, but nobody had the guts, because of money, to come forward. But that's the kind of scenario with Epstein. And so people in his circle are well aware of what he's been doing. And this is not about Epstein. This is about Trump, okay? And I'll shut up in a minute. I just want to make sure I make good. This point, which I've had on my mind for a while. For everybody's information, Donald Trump's, this is historical, Donald Trump's grandfather, all right, a German. He left Germany to avoid service in the First World War. He tried to get back in the country, and the Germans deported him. They threw him out of the country because he wouldn't serve his country, Germany. Unfortunately, he landed on our shores. That's when we got Donald Trump. Much like the grandfather, he was deferred five times from the Vietnam War. And I was thinking the other night as I was musing on this and writing, many of the parents of those who died in Vietnam, I'm certain that they're turning over in their grave when this stuff comes forward in greater clarity. But there are many other people who are younger, whose brothers and sisters died in that war. And yet this guy, the braggadocio, the big shot, the beater up of women and blacks and anybody who he thinks he can get away with, he didn't have the guts to serve. By the way, this is factual, okay? A tenant of his father, Fred Trump, was also, I guess, a doctor or a bone guy or something. He wrote a prescription that Trump had this problem in his feet. Nobody, nobody has come forward to this. Yet this doctor's family who has passed has acknowledged that this is what was done. So money changed hands to keep Trump out of the war. No different than right now. He paid off Stormy Davis, the other lady, and God knows how many people he's paid off to get advantage so that he doesn't get indicted or to bribe somebody to do something for him. And that's mine for now.
Well, you know, all the things that you mentioned, I think the things that are most important are, and they can be reflected in recent actions, really, and that is...
Hey, Marsh, yes. Can you talk up a little? I can't hear you.
Can you hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Okay. The things that concern me about this president as compared to other presidents are some of the comments and I can just go to what happened yesterday. By trying to make a strong statement and be a strong president and saying that they could wipe out Afghanistan, all of Afghanistan, but didn't want to kill 10 million people. It's statements like that and tweets like that and statements like that off the cuff that not only drive me crazy, but I would tend to think those comments also drive his Defense Department and other people crazy, because they're flippant comments that can be made by a normal human being in a normal political conversation on social media and have no consequences. But
I don't think you can have a normal political conversation on social media.
That's what I'm trying to say. That's exactly what I'm saying, that it's a total different beast. And I think what you see now, and I think you're going to see more of it now that, as Joe would say, quote, Bojo, end quote, is now going to be the Prime Minister of England. I think you're going to have more of those flippant comments come on both sides of the great divide, the ocean. And I think that's the danger to me of Donald Trump, is that it's a sign of where politics is heading in general.
It did.
What?
Don't you think it's headed? The thing that is striking about Johnson is that this has been a 15-month plan that has just borne the fruit of his being prime minister.
And when you look at this, you realize that I guess if we were back in the old days before radio and TV and telegraph, a president of the United States or somebody who's the head of England or whatever wants to say something, they can say it and it reaches the audience, only the audience they want it to reach. But nowadays, you simply have to be more observant and more aware and more educated as to how dangerous words really are.
And you also have to somehow, and I really hate to say this, you guys can wrap me up in chains and carry me out of here. But the comment section really needs to be disabled, because honestly, one person's comment, one person's opinion amplified turns into a thing, and then people start debating that. And can somebody please tell me what's going on in Puerto Rico? I'm not being facetious. And that's what I mean. You get completely drawn into the...
You get drawn into the craziness, and that's the danger of to me of the Trump presidency. But Jim, and this is the sad part, that is also the allure of the Trump presidency to his supporters, and that's a good 33-34% solid of Americans who voted last time. It's his weakest point and it's his strongest point, and that means that's not going away, and that is the danger that lies within. And I think that's when you look at people in foreign service and you look at people in the Pentagon and you look at people who are business leaders that have to deal internationally, those are the things that really scare you the most.
And the thing that absolutely unhinges me, riffing off that, is an email from the official DNC headquarters on the 21st of July, that was Sunday. Donald Trump and the RNC's money machine raised a combined $108 million for his reelection just in the last quarter. That's more than any sitting president in history has raised by this point in the cycle. And it compares it to Obama having raised $85 million.
Now, I want to go along with that. I'm going to go and I'm going to take on CNN and all the networks and MSNBC. Mimi Roach, who was a big supporter of Hillary Clinton, right? And she is an MSNBC panelist, actually said the other day on TV that Bernie Sanders makes her skin crawl. I don't see him as a pro-woman candidate. This woman has a vendetta against Bernie Sanders because of what of running against Hillary Clinton, and she's an intelligent woman. She's a former DA. She should comments like that are totally unacceptable, and they should not be allowed by the networks.
Yeah, and there and also on that, and this happened a few. This happened a few months ago. A woman came on to talk about her article, and she got so emotional and so, you know, that she ended up saying things that you can't say on TV, you can't say online, and no one stopped her.
You know, and we'll have to wrap this up, but Jim, can you imagine if Donald Trump said about Michelle Obama, she makes my skin crawl? What would the outcry be from the liberal media? They'd be upset. And the liberal media is not upset at all about what Mimi Roca said. Not
even a word. If you didn't see it, didn't know about it.
And that's the direction our politics is headed in, and that's the dangerous
that's
part.
That's bad. Excuse me.
So
the last minute
is yours.
These people, be they guest talking heads or working for the network in a greater capacity, they have no right to try and influence our elections. They can report all day long on the polls and everything else. What she did was just outright wrong. And I don't know why the network has allowed it. I haven't seen anything come back on it. I don't know. Maybe these people are just going crazy, having to follow all the craziness. But that's no excuse. They are there to be our guide as much as they can to the truth. And someone's opinion as just expressed by you, I mean, about that person, it's got no place on the airwaves. End of story.
If you want to write an editorial in a newspaper, write an editorial in a newspaper. If you want to do do an editorial on your own opinion or whatever, do it on your own website. Do it. But this is, you know.
The thing is, before, and we leave it, what makes my skin crawl is the realization over the years now that it was Debbie from Florida,
Debbie
I can't
Wasserman
remember
Schultz.
Her name, blonde lady, who basically started doing things to try and undermine Bernie Sanders in favor of Hillary Clinton. And that was one of the upsetting things for the Sanders supporters. But who was Debbie to try and undermine a very solid citizen, senator, long-term serving person who's running for office? That's not her role.
Nope.
She was in Congress at that time.
We're out of time here, Jim. Sorry.
Bobby?
We're out of time.
We used all your time already.
We're on time.
We're no, out of time.
We're out of time. We're out of time.
What do you mean? I thought we were getting an hour. All these commercials we're doing, my God. Anyhow, this is enjoyable. But I'm certain in your own way you pray, but let's stop praying like hell. We got to get through this thing.
All right.
All right. You take care of yourselves.
Take care, Jim.
Bye-bye.
Jim Lynch, and Cover Your Assets this morning here on Robinhood Radio.